thanks for joining us for the Changing the Industry podcast, where we try to effectuate change for the better, one conversation at a time. Part of that change is providing help for those that need it. This is why we've partnered with the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Whether it's help with sales, operations, or just getting your numbers in order, these folks are some of the very best in the industry. And for our listeners, they'll sit down with you and go over your strengths, your weaknesses, and the opportunities that are in front of you. They'll create a customized plan for how to move forward, absolutely free. That's right, free. And if your plan includes one-on-one coaching, they can also help you with that. There's no hard sales pitch, no obligation, just honest help from honest people. So if that's something that you think could benefit you, make sure you click on the link in the show notes. And now, on to the show.
You want to do your clip?
Too quick.
Too quick?
You're what was that?
Too quick. You're hitting the button too quick.
I'm hitting the button too quick. Greg and James.
Yes.
How are we, fellas?
Doing phenomenal.
Doing excellent.
Very good. Very good.
Scooch that thing like right up on
you. Yeah. You'll be right
slide,
up on it.
Yeah. Just slide the thing out.
There you go.
It's perfect.
Go.
Nice and
now
heavy.
Now we're in there.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. What's wrong? You look concerned.
No, I'm just making sure all the buttons are good.
a lot of technology going on right now.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's not. It's not. Yeah. This is overkill. We could probably
make
We could probably kill this thing and just run everything out of that.
Yeah, we could.
Couldn't we?
If we were going to do that, the only way I see that would work.
There's no mic control on that.
There is mic controls. But okay. If I was going to do that, what I would have to do is I would have to run XLR to 3.5 and put them on a splitter or something. I wouldn't be able to have individual audio channels, and you would hate that.
Yeah, that would be a problem. But you would be surprised. So this thing will record individual tracks and a stereo mix. And the stereo mix, if you do the EQ work and all the stuff, mm-hmm. It sounds fantastic.
What I like to do with my EQ, though, is like if I have somebody whose voice is a little bit off, or if I'm over, like in other words, if they're clipping, I can adjust back and forth and get that clip out of it. So.
Can you guys like produce music and stuff? Like,
do you, no, you get would into not like, want that.
No,
he doesn't
no,
even listen to music.
Like, he just sparked up a little bit. He's like, I got some tracks.
Yeah, I think he's got some tracks over there. He's got the deep cut.
Brandon, that works for David, can do that for you.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So, you know, if you ever need that,
I don't
that
know if assistant. He writes music. I know he like. He does all the sound setup for. Okay. So somebody will come in, a big DJ. Because they're in this like underground like music thing, so some big DJ that's popular in their group will come out and he'll set up their entire sound system, like all the speakers. He'll run all the wire and stuff like that. He does that on the weekends.
And he edits your guys' stuff. Sometimes.
No, David does all that.
No, okay. He's my technician.
Oh, he's your technician.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Now I don't know if y'all know this, but Kent Bullard owned and ran a recording studio. Mm-hmm. Does it make you nervous seeing something unplugged?
Something unplugged? I'm like, oh, is that the cable that doesn't work anymore?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Kent Bullard, he writes his own music.
Yeah.
So some of the ads that we run, the music that is running behind the voiceover is Kent's music.
Okay.
Kent's original music that he's written. Yeah. Isn't that great?
So,
and it's good. It's really good. Like if you listen to like royalty free music and you're just looking for something, I listen to hundreds of songs. I'm just going through and like, don't like that. He has sent me some stuff and it's really good. You're like, oh, I can use that.
We were really just nice. Downstairs listening. Well, yeah, the topic was AI.
Jump cars when I'm stressed out. He gets really nervous about it. I'll never forget. We were in Allentown, Pennsylvania one time. We weren't in Allentown.
No,
we were in Mount Pocono, and we're listening to Ethiopian jazz. I'd had a really bad day, and as the car sailed through the air across like one of those humps on a back road,
driving like a
he's
psycho.
Like squealing, man. He's like,
I was hanging on for dear life.
Yeah,
it's scary. Are you in Boston?
I'm in Boston. Yeah,
I'm sorry. It's a contact sport. Driving is a contact sport in Massachusetts.
It is.
My wife is from Illinois. She came out and she was visiting me in Boston, and she's looking around and she's like, why is every car like dinged up? Every car is dinged up. And I'm like, oh, it's because, you know, you hit each other here. He's like, what? Yeah, you know, parking lots and streets. Like, somebody cuts you off, you ding them. Like, what are you talking about? It's like, yeah, it's a thing here.
I was talking to Pete at dinner the other night, and we were talking about a while back. You know Trisha from ASTA.
Yes.
We were in Chicago for a meeting, and we realized that we're in downtown Chicago, and we're supposed to be at a meeting. And like, we're downtown, right? I'm at the Science Museum, and she's at Wrigley Field, and there is a baseball game. And so she calls and she's like, hey, we're supposed to be at this meeting at this time. It's 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon in Chicago. And we're supposed to be at this meeting at like 5:15. Okay. And it's up, you know, where, I cannot remember the name of it. The ICAR facility is in Chicago. We're supposed to be there. And I got us there, and it was a restaurant right near there. We got there on time, and Trisha kept saying things like, hey, I think you just touched that car. The lanes are narrow. What do you want me to do?
The people in the automotive industry kind of laugh. So like, I'm in some of these circles, and we start playing, what kind of car do you drive?
Right.
And because I live in Boston, I get laughed at. I'm like, I own a 2018 Subaru. I was like, it's, and like, what time? I'm like, it's a legacy. And like, all these cool kids like Tony Mercury, they're like, I have an Audi S6. They kind of laugh at me. And I'm like, I live in Boston. I was like, I don't care when people ding my car.
Right.
So to your point, people bump into my car all the time in South Boston. I'm just like, it's fine.
You probably don't even drive that much, do you?
No, I don't.
The car park is
5 miles a day.
Yeah.
To the office and back. That's it.
Yeah. So you drive to the office?
I do. And the office is like literally two blocks away. I just like having my car with me.
See, I need my wide open spaces down in North Carolina. That's what I need.
Yeah.
Wide open road so I can just go zip around.
It's freaky. Mm. I will say, though, so we were just back in Boston to visit, and I'm driving through on the other side of the river where the Boston Tea Party stuff is, and then everything over there. So when I was growing up, all of that was run down, dilapidated, like burnt factories that had just been shipped out. Everything was just destroyed. Now it's all like hipster restaurants like lofts, and it's really nice to walk through.
$25 cocktails.
Oh, $25 cocktails. Yeah. It's awesome though. Yeah. And I'm like, I cannot believe how much it's changed in 20 years. It's nuts.
That's wild.
It's really nice though, but you don't want to drive. It's still scary to drive there.
It is.
It's like, hey, the GPS couldn't keep up. The GPS is like, hey, you're making the wrong turn. It's like, no, I'm underground. You think I'm above ground. Right, I'm not. Right. And so it kept getting confused.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Lucas and I have been telling you about Parts Tech for a while now and how it gives you access to unlimited parts and tire vendors and direct integration with over 35 shop management systems. And now they've just launched a new referral program. All you have to do is open your Parts Tech account, go to My Shop, and click on the Rewards tab. There you'll find your referral URL, which you can share via email, text message, or on your social media. If your referral signs up for a new account and places 5 orders in the first 30 days, Parts Tech will send you a $100 gift card. That's it. Nothing else is needed. Your referrals can get you $100 just for using Parts Tech, which, by the way, is absolutely free to get started with. So if you're using Parts Tech already, start sharing that referral link. And if you haven't signed up for Parts Tech yet, what are you waiting for? Click on the link in the description or go to partstech.com/podcast. That's partstech.com/podcast.
Hey, one more thing. If you find out that your shop management system doesn't integrate with Parts Tech, it's time to upgrade. David and I use what we believe to be the very best system on the market, Shopware. With unmatched features like Parts GP Optimizer and DVX, which is their digital vehicle experience, Shopware really is way more than just a shop management software. With it, you'll be able to create an immersive and interactive experience for your client, setting you apart from everyone else using run-of-the-mill software. Are you ready to upgrade? Click the link in the show notes to get started.
Idea. I don't know how it hasn't been able to figure out tunnels. Everything's underground. So like you're driving and it's like, hey, you're taking the wrong road. It's like, no, I'm underground. Roads above me.
Have you seen the tunnel beacon thing? There's a whole release about it on Google. They're going to municipalities and state road departments, and they're putting beacons in tunnels. And so what it is when you go into the tunnel, because it within the proximity, it's telling Google Maps where you are.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it tells it, hey, you're on the lower road deck.
In Boston, I think they have it going out to Logan Airport.
Apple does not have that. Apple was freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I should have turned on my Google Maps.
Yeah. But you don't like it tracking you, so.
I turn everything off. I don't want it to know where I am. You know, the VPN will not let Android Auto work.
Really?
Yeah. I had my VPN on and it freaked out. It was throwing me an error message on the MMA, and it was throwing me an error message on my thing. Turn off your, because it knew I had my VPN on, because of course it does. It's like, you have a VPN on. Turn it off. It says you're in the Netherlands. You're not in the Netherlands.
Oh, I might be. You don't know.
Stay off the grid. Stay off the grid.
You know, Mike Allen does the car guessing game. And you got to be careful going places with Mike, okay? Because Mike will get you into a situation that it's very difficult to get back out of. And the number of people that he has genuinely convinced of crazy stuff. I mean, I had to argue with a lady to convince her that we were not actually there for a shopping cart wheel balancing and alignment class, okay? I mean, this lady was arguing back with me about his lie, believing the whole thing, right? And so Mike, it multiple occasions, will sit down and will begin talking to a random person and convince them that he knows everything about them. And one of the best ones is 2019 CRV. I don't know how, but he picks these women that's all they drive, I guess, because he'll start going down this list of questions. He'll show up, he'll turn his phone or they'll turn their phone around and be like, yeah, that is my car. And you're like,
yeah, well, that's kind of incredible. It's not.
I'm impressed. It's like a magician, sort of. Like,
yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
He is a smooth talker. Yeah. You got to give him credit. So, okay, I guess this is where I get myself in trouble. You know, I used to have mechanic advisor. I've abandoned them.
Lucas was
Greg's been mad ever since.
No, I had mechanic advisor. You know, they're not mechanic advisor anymore, but.
I know. Well, so that's what I was getting ready to ask is what changed.
His shirt says buy.
And that was just, we're trying to do that transition.
It's
a
transition.
So for a year, it was.
So that's an old shirt. It needs to be burned.
So this, his name tag says buy steer and his name tag says steer. So that's a bit of a complexity, huh?
Yeah.
No, yeah. That's true.
It's funny because our marketing team has sent out communication to us and they're like, can you please say this now? So like first it was steer by mechanic advisor. And they're like, now we have to just say steer.
Yeah.
Or steer CRM. And there's a couple other things, but like we get details from the marketing team of how we need to communicate the brand, which is interesting. Process, but, you know, it's a lot different than like.
Well, why the shift? Why move away from mechanic advisor?
It's a good question. Mechanic advisor started out kind of like TripAdvisor. So I think maybe when you used our product back in the day, we were like a directory.
Yeah.
So the vision of Parker Swift, our CEO, was kind of like TripAdvisor. So TripAdvisor is a big Boston company.
Sure.
And at that time, Yelp was taken off. And him being the entrepreneur, he was like, I want a place where people can go and read good reviews, bad reviews. And again, this is like 2006 when he created the company. Yeah. He went and worked at Vistaprint and started becoming like an SEO master. So everything he was learning at Vistaprint about Google SEO and search engine results, he started applying to Mechanic Advisor.
Sure.
And he was doing some, I wouldn't say shady stuff, but they call it black hat SEO. Like he was doing like just some stuff just to get like tons of traffic to the website. And again, this is like 2007, 2008. And he built up tons of traffic. And then he started really diving in on just making the directory like with really good content, good data, stuff like that. And then he just didn't want to play the Google game anymore. Yeah. So that's when we shifted from Mechanic Advisor to the Mechanic Advisor CRM. He was really interested in text communication, email. We realized there probably really in 2015, there wasn't really a good solution out there for like mass texting, stuff like that. Also at that time, when I talked to repair shop owners, a lot of them told me they're like, I don't want to be texted. My customers don't want to be texted. So that was like, it was like hard to have that text conversation back in like 2015, 2016. It started getting a little bit better in 2019. But anyways, we're the Mechanic Advisor CRM and Parker's like, this doesn't really make sense. He's like, we're not really advising mechanics with anything. He goes, it's like TripAdvisor.
Okay.
And he's like, I'd rather have a brand that makes sense for what a CRM does.
Sure.
So steer customers back to the repair shop, steering wheel. There's a lot you can play on that. Then you talk to people in Texas and get jokes about steer, like what a steer is. And it hurts sometimes.
Be careful talking to John Perm.
But yeah, that makes sense. The story behind
it. I guess I never saw it as the TripAdvisor. That makes sense now that you told the story, but I joined when it was the CRM thing. The platform was very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the entire times I've always seen it as a CRM company, never saw it. The directory's still up, by the way.
It is.
Yeah.
And I still get occasional messages to the directory.
Yeah.
Like something will pop up and go, what is this? I'm like, oh, well, good. That's nice.
Yeah. We're going to revitalize the directory. So that is in our roadmap to bring it back.
We're
so
going to come all full circle. We're going to go right back.
So there's a lot we're going to do with the directory. Probably not till like next year, but Parker still loves the directory and wants to bring it back and have it as a resource for the industry. So the
directory thing would be great if you guys did the exact opposite of what RepairPal ended up doing.
Right.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yep.
And I don't know, maybe it's that the directory game, like there's no monetization. It's really difficult to say, hey, we will vet you. We'll put you on our directory. We'll feature you in our directory. Because like Yelp will do that too, but they don't know what they're doing. Yelp's a mess. And then RepairPal started out that way, but then and this was my biggest gripe, and I would yell at RepairPal about this. I'm like, you guys need to redline the area. Like if you find a shop, the 2 miles around it cannot be touched by another shop.
Right.
But at that point it's like, okay, well, I need the $200 from you and the shop next to you and the five other shops that are right around you. And then at that point I'm like, okay, so who are you steering customers towards? And then they figured out that, oh, if we get into bed with 50 other companies and start steering leads into the shop that way, we can stay relevant. And that's the direction they ended up going, rather than, hey, we're going to try to really build a good resource for consumers to then steer them into good shops. That was their goal at the beginning of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it did not turn out that way.
Hopefully when we rebuild it, we'll stick to that plan. I don't think we'll charge per lead or a car that comes in, but we're not going to like take ticket. Like I know shops seem to get really frustrated when they have to look at the data and be like, that customer is my customer. It didn't
come. Yeah.
You know, so you get into that war and then dictating the price too. Like we never want to do that. Like your price is your price.
Well, that's really caused a lot of problems.
That was the CarMax thing. Because now they should be a mediator between the extended warranty company and the shop. They should be the mediator, or at least an advocate for the shop, because that's who's paying the bill, right? That's where they're getting their money, is from the shop. So they should be the advocate for the shop, but that's not how it's worked out. They used to. Like a year or 2 years ago, you used to email RepairPal and go, hey, they are screwing the customer. They're pissing me off. Fix it. And they would come in and go, hey, we've got it worked out. Sorry for the trouble. You know, we jumped in and now they're doing that
for the warranty company.
Now they're doing that for the warranty company going, hey, you guys are charging too much. Whoa, well, let's back up here. You guys are charging too much. You guys going to cut your rate for me? Hell no.
Right.
But there is a need. There is a need for a vetting process. We had this whole conversation with the very last episode that we just released last Monday with David McColes.
Yeah.
And he's pushing this whole certification thing, and we need to have some way to vet technicians. The idea behind RepairPal, the fundamentally, I thought was a fantastic one, a way to vet the shop, a way to say this shop has been properly vetted and has qualified technicians, has a defined and transparent sales process.
Right.
And backs up their work with a good long warranty.
And that's kind of what Auto Tech IQ's doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Real similar to that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we go in that depth, like with what the directory would be, but
Frank Steele.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. I will say that.
I like Frank. And what's the guy's name? Uwe? How do you pronounce his name?
Uwe.
Okay. Yeah. Uwe. I don't have anything against them or anything like that. My issue is the, I'm going to start this tech thing, build it up, and then some conglomerate is going to come in, buy it because now it's worth, you know, 50 million, 100 million. He's going to get his bag. And so what's the end game here?
We're back to square one.
We're back to square one. We're back to square one. And so I get freaked out with these, with this new technology. Not you. You like to make friends. Me, I antagonize everybody. Don't care. I'm looking at the end game. Like the technology's cool. The idea behind it's cool. The vision's cool. What's the end game? What's the end game? And the end game is going to be, I want another project because I'm bored. He doesn't need the money. He's got his money. He got his bag with
Auto Vinyls.
So now it's a game for him. That's great. But the idea behind it is I want to get engaged and interested all the way till I get my bag, bounce, and then go start something else. And a few years after, I go off into my island, go find myself, meditate, bongo drumming naked on the beach, right? And then when he's done with that and he comes back, he's like, I want to do this all over again. And it'll be another project.
Unfortunately, you see that with a lot of the software companies in our space, though, where they come in for 3-4 years and then they're sometimes even shorter than that.
Yeah.
You know,
and then just bounce.
Yeah. We're really trying to focus on Steer, get it to be the best product, communication product for repair shop owners, for their customers.
It's interesting because I don't want to speak poorly of anybody or anything like that, but I switched and the reason that I switched, and I told you this, but the reason that I switched was like the multiple texting platforms and multiple, like having to keep up
channels,
with Autoflow, Shopware, and Mechanic Advisor, and right. Like I've got all these places that messages are coming in, and it was causing a problem because my advisors wouldn't see something. And so then the client felt like we weren't responding to them. We weren't taking care of them because we had so many things moving and they just didn't go to that tab for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it caused a problem. I will say that there is something different about your texting platform and your email platform than everybody else's.
Over and over again.
What?
I'm just saying, he keeps saying this over and over
again. This isn't the first time I said this. I said this earlier.
You just said this last night.
That for some reason, like my unsubscribe rates when I switched went way up.
Okay.
And if I send a text blast right now, stop sending text blasts because they just all unsubscribe from it.
Right.
And it's completely different. I don't know why yours worked differently, but we didn't see that. Like I got responses from people and they would say things and they would ask questions and I would text back. There's something different about this platform.
Yeah.
It's the same messages we sent before.
Yeah.
But people don't respond the same to it.
The
same
Twilio?
We use Twilio, and with all the 10 DLC stuff that's gone on, I don't want to go down that whole entire conversation of 10 DLC. It's not really that much fun with Twilio.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like guidelines and rules now in place. Like I'll just give you one, for instance. T-Mobile doesn't like two promotional texts go out in 30 days. If they see it, they will shut down your number.
Nice.
So what we've had to do is we have a 10 DLC team now at Steer that basically monitors the texts that are going out to make sure you don't do that, to protect the shop with texting. Because now, too, your number is tied to your federal tax ID now.
Yeah.
If you get that blacklisted,
you're up the creek. Yep. Yeah.
So you got to be really careful. It's a lot different than it was 2 or 3 years ago. But what we found is now we have to put like text limits in, and we're doing packages based on how many texts are going out. Because we need to have a little bit more control. It's not the wild, wild west like it used to be, where we had shops that were sending out. We had one shop send out 10,000 text messages.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And we got charged for it by Twilio. We lost money on that account quite a bit. But like they were doing it like pretty often.
Spamming, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, this is not best practices. We try to teach best practices, but we try to monitor and put guardrails in place so shops don't get in trouble.
Well, and beyond getting in trouble, the issue is that all they're going to do is piss the consumer off.
Correct.
Right? Like, you're not actually gaining any ground. You're just upsetting people.
Yep.
And so, like...
That just depends. It depends on what people are used to. Like, I get text bombed all day long by whatever the hell I sign up for. But I kind of like it because, you know, there's good deals coming out. Yeah. Like, you want to jump on it. But, you know, how often do you still get people that come in, they're like, I don't want to give you my email. Well, why?
Right.
Well, I don't want to get spam.
It's like, dude, do you have any idea? If you put your email in absolutely anywhere at any point, it's been sold off 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Did you give your email to your bank? They sold it. Your credit card company? They sold it. Your mortgage company sells your information.
Yep.
Your flipping mortgage company sells your information. Everybody. Everybody sells your information. It's insane to think that I'm going to keep this little space in here. And so pissing the people off, it just depends on where we are in the cycle.
Well, you know, one of the ways that I get frustrated is like classic firearms. If you've ever subscribed to, and okay, look, I love guns and they do giveaways and you have to put in your telephone number. Right? You got to put in your telephone number. Well, they've made this amazing brand, but the deal is once you put your telephone number in, you can unsubscribe all you want. Eventually, they will get you back. Right. Sooner or later, even if you unsubscribe, they'll give you a period of time that you don't get any text messages. Yep. And then all of a sudden you start popping back up. And if you reach out to them and you say something, oops, I'm sorry, we had a little bit of an issue, but we fixed it. And you unsubscribe again. And all of a sudden, a few weeks later, really you're back on that list. Though,
just block the number.
They changed their telephone number.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just this constant floating.
Is there a competitor to Twilio?
Something broad. Broadband or
so
broad
no.
width.
You're there's like, oh, yeah, that's really, there's this there's, tiny there's company. One,
but Twilio is the dominant player with texting.
So the idea is to get a competitor going.
That isn't.
Well, I don't know anything about it.
Get at it.
But I'm going to ask Kieran over there. I'm going to go, hey, buddy, you need to get out of this like shop CRM stuff. This is it. Trust me, you're going to run into a wall with crazy shop owners. Crazy expectations. You don't want to mess with that. Go start a competitor to that'll.
Hey everyone, it's Lucas. I'm sorry to jump in, but I thought it was important to come and say this. You know, I'm often asked, why do we always talk about Kim and Brian Walker and shop marketing pros on the show? It's because we genuinely believe in their product. Why do I use them for my own marketing? In fact, they're building me a new website right now. It's not cookie cutter. I kept getting on Facebook and every shop looked the exact same. I didn't want to be that. And it's not just that. It's that they're part of your team. When you hire them to do your marketing, they get to know you. They know what you believe. They know what you say, and they know why you do what you do. And they share that with your clients. That's huge. And beyond all of that, probably the most important factor in all of this is they stand behind their work. So don't wait. Go today and get your free marketing analysis from Shop Marketing Pros. They're genuinely our friends, and they're genuinely here to help shop owners have a better life. Click on the link in the show notes for your free marketing analysis today. That's right. It's free. Doesn't cost you a dime.
Let you do a little bit more stuff that isn't as... who's imposing the rules? Is it the carriers? It's
the carriers.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. And there's all these fees, too, that are going on in the background, too, to register the number. I used to be able to register shops literally within like an hour. I could get a text blast out an hour after signing up. And now it takes 7 to 10 days.
Right. Wow.
The entire registration process.
Which 7 to 10 days is a huge improvement from where it was last year when it was all coming into place too. So that's been brought down a lot.
So the carriers are probably not making that much money on the individual consumer. They're just tacking on these weird fees in the background to hit the individual businesses.
Yep.
So they can then get you to sign up with a free iPhone.
Yes.
It's a $1,500 iPhone they're giving away for free. And you can sign up for 3 years
your data
or whatever.
For it, but still,
What's that?
You sold your data for it, but yeah, sure.
You're selling your data for it, yeah. And then they're hitting all of the businesses that are even trying to use any of their network at all with fee.
Yep.
So the carriers are evil?
I mean, I
need to vilify somebody.
It's low hanging fruit. They found the low hanging fruit to make some revenue, and they did it. So
you can't really fault them for that. I mean, they did what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, why do you think that? What is different about it that I would see a difference in the effectiveness from your campaigns to what I'm using now? Right, because it's the same thing. Why is it different? Why am I seeing something different?
I think a lot of it was we did a lot of A/B testing for like follow up and Google reviews.
Yeah.
So different wording. So out of the box when you sign up for Steer or when you sign up for Mechanic Advisor, we had the campaign set to go.
Yeah.
We knew what worked because we were tracking the data in the background. Like what text message brought in the most reviews.
Right.
So we were testing them out and then we saw asking really politely for a review after. So what we found was a two-step process. Check in 2 days after the visit. Hey, how's everything with your vehicle?
Right.
And make it, customize it. Like put in the customer's name,
Yeah.
Put the vehicle in there, make and model. How's everything with your Honda Accord?
Right.
Question mark. Get feedback. Make sure everything's good. And then a few days later, politely ask for the review.
Right.
Hey, we really appreciate you coming to L&N Auto Performance. If you could leave us a review, that would be great. Here's the link. Something like along those lines. I don't know exactly what it is. But just like switching the wording and like the layout of the text,
yeah,
it goes a long way. And I try to tell shops a lot of time, I was like, you should always be looking at like the texts that are going out.
Yeah.
Like go on that customer journey, get the text messages. Does it feel right? Does it sound like your voice? And like, look at the data in the background. Like which text is actually bringing in the most revenue? Like we track a lot of that stuff. Which one's getting the highest engagement? And and play around with it.
Well, and so that's so true, because that's one of the things that we did with the shop is I was paying attention. If it didn't sound like it came from me and it wasn't, because, you know, like you're going to speak differently to somebody in Boston than you would speak to somebody in my neighborhood, right? And if it didn't come across like it was me, it just didn't sound right to them, and they could tell it was automated, and they're like, meh, and they just shelved it off, right?
Yes.
But when we sat down and really customized them to make them sound like us, or when we sent messages and people understood that was actually us sending a message, it was effective compared to the others were not effective at all, right? Yep. And I think that's one of the keys is balancing it and making it seem like it is you sending that message.
Hold on. How did this turn into you even know what the hell you're saying? You asked him the question, and now you're like explaining to him
the light bulb went on.
That's my point.
The light bulb went on. Yeah.
That, you didn't do any A/B testing. You didn't read what you had set up. Now,
no, of course. And look, here's the thing: is we would watch. We went through it with him. We put one of our vehicles in the system. We ran through that vehicle. We saw the text messages that came back. We saw the review requests that came back. We made small tweaks to it. And those small tweaks.
Why didn't you do that now?
Well, I have done that now, but it still doesn't do any. Something different.
That's my point.
But there's more to it. So the other thing, too, that we do is we get a local number, so it feels local. So it's not like one of those numbers you get from like Uber Eats where it's like a number, a dash, and a couple numbers, which some companies do. Mm-hmm. There's another company out there that I know does like 1-800 numbers. You don't have to go through 10 DLC. With 1-800 numbers. So it's kind of like a workaround for some CRM companies to do that. Mm. But we do a local number that forwards to the shop, but you do a local number with the local area code. And it's just that personalization where they don't think software is actually reaching out to them to see how their Honda Accord is doing. So I think that's another strategy that works really, really well.
Right.
How'd you avoid the accent?
What's that?
The accent.
Right.
Are you
now,
from Boston? Boston.
So I was born in Boston. I lived in California for 8 years, and then I moved back to Boston. I grew up in high school in Boston. I went to school in Connecticut.
I hear it.
It comes out every once in a while. We get a couple of drinks, it'll come out. But like, I guess when I'm work Greg or steer Greg, it's a little bit more, I guess.
I
can control it a little bit
when
more.
You're just letting loose, hey, kiddies, you wicked pizza.
We were throwing dots last
throwing
night.
Dots last
we were throwing,
night,
throwing dots last night. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you changed to steer, a lot of things changed, right? Yep, like it wasn't just you changed the name.
Yep.
What? Because I didn't see it after that. Like we looked at the platform, we looked at like the dashboard and stuff a few times. But what changed? Like what's different?
So a lot of what we did, and I'll admit it, we released it a little bit too early. We upset some of our existing customers because they were beta testers coming in. I don't think they really realized they were beta testers. And
you got to tell them.
I'll admit it. Like we thought it was perfect, but with software, it's like. You don't know what's going to go wrong until it goes wrong, and you put a lot of stress on the system.
Yeah.
So it took us probably about 4 or 5 months to like really break the system, to really clean it up and where it is today, where it's great. Now we're adding features and take a lot of feedback, but a lot that's different is data. So what we got was a lot of feedback from a lot of the top shops of, hey, if I go on a dashboard, this is exactly what I want to see to know how my shop's performing. So like, what are my average repair order trends? What are my sales trends? Like, where are my slow months? So like, you can look at steer in seconds and know kind of what your trends look like, where your slow months are. And then you can, I know Cecil was talking about it yesterday about like, know which vehicle is bringing in the most money. Like when you start building your avatar, like we have that on the dashboard.
Yeah.
Like you can literally filter in seconds that Subaru's bringing in the most money for me. Mm-hmm. This car is bringing in the highest ticket. And then we can build marketing around that. The other thing that we've done is we've gotten really deep into customer segmentation. Okay. So it's not just filtering last visit, customers that spend over $100. Like we can filter Ford truck customers. We can filter by brands that they're using.
And, that's pretty cool.
And that's why we now have the partnership with Mobile One now.
Okay.
So we're working with Mobile One to do Mobile One campaigns because we're picking up that data in the ticket, like that line item. And then we know the interval, and then the communication is going to be around how great Mobile One is because it's a great brand.
Right.
That's what we're doing with the partnership there. But like we could do it almost with anyone because of how deep we can go into those tickets and create that customer journey or that communication to that customer.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
I think I still come back to the multiple platforms, though. Is there ever a way to solve that multiple platform situation?
So I always get the question, like, why can't we just use one number?
Yeah.
You don't want to do one number. I think two numbers is a sweet spot. You want one for DVI to communicate with the customer while the vehicle's in there, and then you want one for marketing. Because you're going to have customers that want the DVI but don't want the marketing. So it's good to have two. To your point, I think once you get into three, it gets really confusing for the customer. So I think two's that sweet spot. But I would never want to merge, I think, with the DVI number because I think it just makes things a little...
I'm not even necessarily worried about the number of telephone numbers, right? I've got... My thing is like with the shop, I've got the regular telephone number has texting associated with it. So occasionally somebody will text that. I handle all of those texts myself because... like the main shop telephone number all comes back to me. So I'll like get it on an app on my phone and I'll see it. I miss most of them, right? It's like weeks before I answer half of them. I've got AutoFlow, which is like another text number. Right. And then I have Shopware, which is another text number. I don't mind.
I don't text from Shopware at all, ever.
90% of our conversations happen within Shopware.
Really?
Within Messenger. 90% of our conversations happen right there.
That would make sense because then at that point you've got history.
Yeah, I've got the history. And on top of having the history, now, like as we're talking, they can be looking at the repair order and they just pop open Messenger on the repair order and they're sending me a message back and forth. We're talking about the issue. They're on the screen. They can see it. They're not on a different platform looking at something.
Yeah.
And it's sending a text and a message within the repair order. And so I can talk back and forth.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with multiple numbers.
Too many tech stacks.
Yeah.
Like your tech stack is huge.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm like over here and I'm over here and I'm over here. Right. And
I try to do all the texting within AutoFlow specifically to avoid that because they'll send us messages in Shopware. Like nobody's checking that. The little red thing, I see it. Juan doesn't pay any attention to it because he's just not used to it.
Well, but do you ever look at Shopware and do you ever look at what the customer sees? Because there's a button at the top of it that says, if you have a question about this repair order or whatever, click this button.
Yeah, nobody does.
I can open mine and show you. Like, I've got a ton of messages right now. I've got 28 unread messages right now.
If you train the customer to do it that way, but they end up just using...
We don't train our clients to do that. Mm. We don't put emphasis on that. Most everything is done through AutoTextMe. They get their DVI through AutoTextMe.
Are your customers different, though? Like, different demographic? I mean, obviously, you're in Kansas City, North Carolina.
They deal with this guy. Of course, they're different. they wouldn't tolerate it if they weren't different.
The shop's open right now. I'm not even there.
Lucas's customers like that button, I'm guessing.
They must like the button, and they ignore the button.
My customers ignore the button. Right.
I'm familiar with the button. I know what you're saying. I'm 100% with you.
Yeah.
But they'll just send a text message saying I'm confused.
Right. I could see that. I mean, we get some too. But for me, it's more of how many different websites or tabs do I have to keep open and keep up with,
right? Yeah.
And make sure that I'm responding because that's I will never forget. I got my ass chewed one time for not responding to somebody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's like. After that, I don't know if I've just got PTSD or what.
Right.
But it is super frustrating to me. That's like one of my cardinal rules because I realized how upsetting it was to that person.
Right.
Like, hey, I had a problem. You were completely unattentive to my problem. You weren't trying to help me. It was just that we didn't know. They could have called. They could have done anything else. And I've seen a generational shift, especially college students. I had a 25 or 30 message conversation on Google My Business this morning with this lady who needed her car fixed. And I'm like, hey, you can call a shop and they can make an appointment. She said, I really don't like telephone calls and stuff like that. So that's why I do it by text. Yep. And so a lot of people, they don't want to communicate with a telephone call. They're not going to pick up the phone to call you to say, I've got a problem. They feel more comfortable sending a text. They feel like it's less confrontational. And so I especially in that scenario, it's very difficult if I miss something because I feel like I'm letting them down. And having multiple platforms is a pain in the butt when it comes to that.
And I'm telling you, I go into some of the platforms because we're doing setup. I just want to make sure everything's good for specific customers, stuff like that. So, and I also like, again, looking at some of the data with some of the unique campaigns that we test out with some of the shops. But like, I go into some shops and I see 70 unread text messages.
Dude,
I see it a lot. Like,
I would freak out.
Yeah. It gives me anxiety.
Yeah, I would get super upset. Yeah.
How these shops manage. This is, I get so angry. Like, we ignore our text messages. Okay. We don't do any mailers. Okay. Yeah, shop's full. Where the hell are you getting these customers from? Oh, we got a big sign out front. We're right next to the Walmart. That's it? Yeah. It's like, you gotta be kidding me.
It's disheartening because me and even James, we've gone out. So even for Mobile One, I'm visiting shops throughout the week. So at least 2 days a week, I'm going out visiting shops with the distributors. James has been going out with ATD and then he's also gone out with Advance Auto Parts. Yep. But we go all over the country. Mm-hmm. But like, I walk into like probably 8 to 10 shops a day when I go out and like 4 or 5 of them, it's bad. Like,
yeah.
Dirt all over the place, like dust on parts in the waiting area. Like there's parts in the waiting area.
Right away which one of those and shops I'm like, has 70 unread text messages. You know right
and,
away.
And I'm like, I'm looking at the rep. I'm like, why are we here? Like, I'm like.
You bring up a valid point. Do you think that is, are those owners checking out? Is that really what that is? They just don't care. They just want out. Listen, and
some of us just get used to having that pile of parts in the corner. Juan, I told you to clean that thing up.
I've been to your shop. It's not that bad. The insulation falling out of the ceiling is pretty rough.
That's in the shop.
Nobody sees it. There's a window into the shop, isn't there?
They can't see that. The car's blocking it. And also, I'm not ripping that thing down. It's fine. It's fine. It's keeping it warm up there.
I don't think you know how insulation works. It has to be like up against the part where cold air is coming in. But I mean, seriously, is that... when you go into those shops... Is the owner the difference?
Yes.
I think a lot of those times too. So like when you see some of those fall offs, right? It's a lot of times when those owners are really caught in working in the business at that point in time. They're not at that point in time where they can work on their business and really focus on a lot of the processes, which is where a lot of the other stuff starts breaking, right? And then if they're not at that point, you also see it kind of feed throughout the rest of the shop.
Right.
But it's all depending on where their mindset is on what they want to do with that shop. And sometimes they just get to that point, it's the comfort zone where they can just put that head down and grind and then figure out.
They think they're the best shop owners in the world. Yeah. Like they tell me, they go, I have so many customers. Yeah. My customers love me. And I'm like, so what's your retention numbers look like? And they're like, I don't know. My neighbors and my family come in here all the time. I'm like, okay. I'm like, great retention.
So you really don't know.
Exactly. Correct.
You don't know what
they
your
just feel good. Like,
they feel, it feels good. And here's the scary part is, when you dig into those situations like that, you find out that they are half of the price that they should be.
Right.
And, or whatever, I shouldn't say should be, because they're not delivering a good product. But if you go take that same repair into my shop, I'm going to be 100 to 150% higher.
Right. Right.
And I tell them that and they're like, well, what do you mean? It's like, dude, like that part is a $100 part. It is not a $45 part. That's a $100 part, and that labor operation should be $200, not $75. And I'm paying I have to pay bills with that money that comes in, but that repair should be X amount of dollars. That's what it's worth. That's what it's worth. Yep. And you go to my shop, and then you go to shops that are operating in a certain manner. They're all going to be within 10, 15% of each other, that price of that repair, especially if you stay in the same area. Now you go to California, it's like, it's a different beast. But even between him and I, he's a completely different part of the country. Okay. But when you start looking at some of my repairs and some of his repairs, you start to see
like that labor, that a water pump on a 2.0 CCTA Volkswagen is $1,372.58, and you go to my shop and it's $1,451. We're 10% of each other. Yeah. How could that be? Well, it's because that part costs this much and the labor costs this much and we have the parts list and stuff like that. It's that's what it should be. But you go into some of these shops and that's $650. It's like, dude, that's a $1,400 repair.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a $1,400 repair. You're charging $650 and you wonder why they keep coming back to you. Yep. It's like, dude, it's not because you're great. You're not. Right. You're a shit shop doing a shit repair and you're just charging way less than everybody else.
They take pride in that too. That's the other thing I find.
Yeah, that's like, really frustrating.
I'm the cheapest shop in town. Everyone loves me and I'm just like.
Dude, I asked somebody the other day. They said that exact thing.
Yep.
And I'm like, dude, it sounds like you're bragging, right?
He was,
I even went back and kind of apologized. I was like, that was probably wrong. Like, are you okay? Are you happy? Are you comfortable? And look, I will tell you this. There's a lot of shops in my community that are exceptionally cheap. The lowest one is $45 an hour, and they don't mark their parts up. Now, how does that happen, right? Let's think about how it happens. Well, they didn't have insurance. They didn't have any amenities. They pay their employees $10.99. And A, that's illegal. They're not supposed to do that. One particular shop, I looked at hiring somebody from one particular shop, and super nice guy, super nice operation, but he's paying his guys $10.99. And so we start talking about it. I'm like, okay, well, who covers workman's comp? And who covers the liability insurance? Because that, like, I've talked to my insurance company about this, and I don't know if you know this. If you have 1099 contractors, it creates a lapse in coverage. So you have to be careful about how you're insured. Right. You have to talk to your insurance.
Because if they're 1099, they shouldn't be in your building.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that they had these employees, and dude's 1099. Turns out he doesn't have workman's comp. He's like, well, I'm making $50 an hour. I'm right. Well, yeah, but if you paid for the insurance, because now his general liability doesn't cover the work that you did in the shop. So you have to have general liability on top of what he has because you're not covered. You don't have workman's comp. Like by the time you take all those numbers out, you didn't make $50 an hour. You're just undercovered.
It's a recipe for disaster.
Right. Like, you don't have the amenities you need. And so like, man, this one shop in town. Pays everybody cash. Everybody that works for him is an illegal alien. And he's like, but dude, I don't care. Like, I'm just, he's like, I want to offer really cheap service. I want to be really, you know, like there for the community. I want to take care of people. And it's an old shop. It's worn out. It's like beat all to pieces. The parking lot is always full. They're always dealing with like trouble customers. Mm. And people take a car to him and they're like, well, gosh, that's half of what you said you were going to charge. Dude, look who's working on the car.
Yep.
They don't have service information. They bought the cheapest parts from the parts store.
Right.
It's not they the went to same the junkyard, thing. They pulled you can't apart. Compare the two. Yeah.
We have a shop in South Boston that's like that, where all the kids who move into the city, they just bring their cars there. And he's got great reviews on like Facebook and even on Google, and it's all cheap, 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 cheap.
Yeah.
We love him. He's cheap. He's affordable.
Yeah.
And it's... He runs a business, but he's got to be stressed out. Like,
yeah, some of
that
course.
Stuff that's going on like that. Like, I don't know. Like, how do you sleep at night with some of that stuff hanging over here?
I don't think he's thinking about
no,
it.
Just,
no.
I
have no problem with the backyard mechanic. I have no problem with the backyard mechanic. So when I lived in Boston, I was broke and I had any money. And there was this guy, I think he was Guatemalan, and he worked out of his backyard. And he was the town mechanic. He was like the neighborhood mechanic. And so you would go there and he'd look at it and be like, I don't know, $50. I'm like, bet, do it. And I think he did a clutch on my Mazda 626 for like $150 plus the price of the part. It's super cheap. But he's a guy in a backyard.
Right.
Like,
right.
There's no, hey, ever since you guys worked on this, my airbag light's on. Like, that's not a thing.
Right.
It's like, dude, no. Call me if you need something. Like, all of that is out the window. Also, warranty, or if you don't catch them, like there's a whole bunch of stuff you're giving up. I have no problem with that guy because he's just a backyard mechanic. You know what you're getting with a backyard mechanic. He has no CRM. He has no SMS. Yeah. Yep. He's got no receipts.
Yep.
You pay him cash. He takes the cash. We're good. Goodbye. That's it. Yep. I have no problem with a backyard mechanic. The backyard mechanic that goes into a building and then hangs a sign and says, I'm a business. That's what I have a problem with. It's like, dude, you are no longer a backyard mechanic. Quit operating like a backyard mechanic.
Right.
You need to shift and think, I am now a business.
Yeah.
I need to have
certain things in place.
Well, you know, I've been talking to a lot of the mobile guys, right? A lot of the mobile techs, and right. and there's a few of them. There's one in the group that
I just want to point out that we are failing the industry. You and I, mostly you, but we are failing the industry. What? Because I every day in the stupid Facebook group, you know, the name of the Facebook group is the Changing the Industry Podcast Facebook group. I have no idea how often you guys have a podcast. Like, it's the name of the Facebook group. Like, it's the logo. The logo says podcast. Where do you think this came from? You think we just get together just to talk about car stuff? What is wrong with you? And then they ask, they're like, oh, you have a podcast? And then it's every day. Oh, I want to talk to you. I want to go mobile. And I'm doing a bad job of dissuading these people from even considering it.
You know, here's the thing is mobile diag works. Okay. That makes sense. It's complex. Mobile diag, mobile programming, things like that work. Mobile repair is hard. Okay. I've got a guy local. Mobile
repair is a nightmare. Is a nightmare. Can you imagine doing it in somebody's driveway?
Well, and so this dude, what he does is oil changes, tires, stuff like that. He does light stuff. He goes around and does it, and he's made it very successful, right? He's done a very good job of it, has a wonderful client base. He's probably not using a CRM. He's using a shop management software, but he doesn't have to have the CRM. He's using convenience, and he's charging a premium for the convenience, right? And it can work like that. If you build a good system and that system's doing what it's supposed to do, it can work. But I'm talking to a lot of these guys, and they came out of a shop. They were frustrated at the boss. They wanted to start their own thing, but property is expensive. Buildings are expensive. Right. So what do? They go mobile. And I was just talking to this guy the other day, and I was telling David about it because he's talking about, hey, I just priced a head gasket on this Jeep vehicle, and it's a 3.6, and I've changed my price since then. And it was a massive swing. He went from 65 to 100 an hour, right? And the massive swing, though, is that as we're talking about it, I'm like, hey, what about cams? What about the rocker arms? Because those things eat rocker arms like nobody's business. It always damages the cam. You're talking about you got to do an oil cooler because if you're going to have the heads off, there's no reason you wouldn't do an oil cooler on this vehicle.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, my original estimate was like $800. And now you're telling me I'm going to be at like $3,200 to do this.
That's a $7,000 repair. We're doing that right now in my shop.
Yeah.
Head gaskets on the 3.6. It's a $7,000 repair.
And so
what's that guy's name?
Huh? I'm not calling him out on the podcast.
Let's call him Bob. Bob, that is a $7,000 repair. That is what you charge. I don't care if you're doing it on the side of the road or you're doing it in the shop. It is a $7,000 repair.
And here's the thing is all it takes is a little bit of knowledge. It takes a little bit of information about how to do this and the right way to do this. But I don't think they hear us saying that they're exposed to massive amounts of liability by doing this. Now, I know you don't care about the liability. And David's made a good point about that before. What liability? If I don't have anything to take, they're not going to take anything. If I give you a paper receipt and there's no name or anything on that,
right.
Just a Facebook account, what are they going to do? I mean, I get that. I really do. But I don't know. I don't think it's what's best for our industry long term.
Going to a bunch of guys going mobile?
It's not even about the guys going mobile. It's about the reputation of auto repair.
And here's the thing. I'm going to just lay this out. If you are considering going mobile, you are doing a shit job of marketing your services to good shops. That's it. Because there is some shop somewhere out there. And I can't move. I'm in Connecticut. I can't move. I got that nonsense from somebody. And, you know, I'm happy for you live in Boston, but I could not imagine living in Boston. I would blow my brains out. Those people are insane. Not you. Everybody is insane there. They are nuts. And so I couldn't be there. So I'd get the hell out. So all I'm saying is somewhere there is somebody somewhere, and it could be in Connecticut. I don't know. But there are some nice shops in Connecticut. I know at least one. Collinsville. Nice people.
Yes, very much.
Everybody else can screw off. They are doing a terrible job of marketing their services because if you are a technician and good, your services come at a premium and are in extremely high demand. And the fact that you cannot find a shop that will take care of you salary wise and benefits wise and put you in a good environment for you to your skills to flourish.
you are doing a terrible job, and it's
you're going to upset some people. And I don't necessarily think that you're right, though. Right?
I am right.
There are people who just can't work for other people, right? I couldn't imagine you working for somebody else. Could you imagine him working for somebody else?
Yeah, but at no point do I go, I'm insulted. Love you. But, you know, that, yeah, but recognize that. Don't say it's the employer. It's me. I know it's me. It is me. I can't go work for somebody. I'm entirely unemployable. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go do 1099 stuff, or I'm going to go open my own business, because I don't have any other option. But these people are employees that I think that the business or starting the business is the solution. They don't realize, dude, you're an employee. You have that employee mindset. You have that. You're like, you are an employee. I don't think that it's a completely different mindset to go open a business. It's just... They're wired differently.
So many people get upset when you say that, but I don't think they understand that you're coming from a place of like, hey, this is hard. This sucks. This isn't.
This sucks so much. They think I'm lying to them. It sucks so much. Do you want to go start your own CRM company?
Well, it's kind of funny you're saying that, because I sometimes, with some of my friends in the industry, I'm like, we should open up a repair shop.
Oh my then, God.
we do say that.
That way, if you're going to do that.
We're like, we know the technology. We know what you need to do. And then, you know, then I listen to you and I'm just like,
oh my goodness. It is the worst thing ever.
But I don't know if it's like the reverse sometimes for shop owners to be like, I want to go to the software side of things. You know, the grass is always greener. I don't know.
I think that's it. I think that they see this grass is greener mentality.
Right.
And they don't really see it for what it is. And they say, hey, you know, they get really upset because we talk about you should have a lot of money before you start a shop. You should not go into this undercapitalized. You need insurance. You need these things. And man, it really frustrates
me. Just be a business savvy, right? Like,
that's well, what it and this whole NASTF thing that upset everybody. It was like, well, what do you have to have a NASTF credential? There's certain legal requirements about your background that you can't have certain types of charges. You've got to have insurance. You've got to have a background check. And you have to have a business license and a business card. Okay? Guys, look, I get that it upsets people. If you can't do those things, we got to really like take a step back and say, all right.
You have to have certain levels of insurance, and you have to put them on the insurance as well. That's kind of annoying, but whatever.
But I guess my point is that you know, what upsets so many people is me saying, if you can't do those things, we have to take a step back and really evaluate this, because it might mean that you're overexposed right now and you don't realize it. Instead, it turned into an argument. And that's the same thing with us telling shops, like, hey, have some money put back before you do this. Mm-hmm. And they get really mad about it. They're like, but I just want to do this, right? You remember when you were a kid?
Right.
And mom and dad were like, hey, I wouldn't do that. Oh, yeah. Like, that's a bad idea. And you're like, but I want to do it. And it makes you mad that they told you no. So you go do it anyway, and then you find out, damn, that was a bad idea.
That was me coming to Mechanic Advisor. My parents were like, what are you doing going to work for your buddy Parker?
That's just because they knew Parker, okay?
It was pretty funny, but it put a chip on my shoulder a little bit. But yeah. I was just like, I don't know, kind of defiant a little bit.
Right.
I was working for a Fortune 500 company before.
Well,
so,
sucking the soul out of you, and you're like, I got to get out of this.
Yeah.
Well, and so I just... I don't think that they recognize that we're sitting here saying like, hey, plan for this.
Right.
Get something behind you before you move into this to do this, because we've seen a lot of people trash their financial success for the rest of their lives because they wanted to own a shop or they wanted to own a mobile business. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear about those because it's embarrassing to step out and say, I fucked up.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Like, oops, I just trashed my financial future.
Right.
Great. You know what I mean?
We're the only ones apparently. Well, not you, but me. I mean, I tell people all the time, like, yeah, it's an easy way to go broke.
It's
an easy way to go broke and get yourself into a ton of debt and a bunch of liability and a bunch of financial burden and all the stress in the world and that text message that, hey, my car just broke down that you just worked on, and just stupid stuff like that all day long. It doesn't stop. It's just a constant grind. And you're fighting for every customer that walks in the door. It is the worst thing ever. That's a terrible idea. Don't go do that.
I've got a bunch that tows for me, Hampton's Body Shops in our town. And I was talking to the owner of the shop one time, and they've got a massive towing operation. He said, you know what I've learned about the towing business? I said, what? He said, do you know how to become a millionaire in the towing business? And I said, no, how? He said, you should probably start with 5 or 6 million, right? Like, yeah, it's just going to evaporate right out from underneath you. And I,
well, you just need a tow truck. It's good. That's all you need. And it's fine. You'll make lots of money.
As long as you don't pay for all the insurance and all the other things you're supposed to have. I need the
mac and cheese food truck podcast guys try to dissuade me against the mac and cheese truck.
You're going to get mad at them? You're going to send them dirty messages and post in their Facebook
group? Well, you don't know what I'm talking about. I started my business with $1,000 and a good reputation, and all you got to do is make really good mac and cheese. Everybody will just show up. Ugh. I want to know the holes. I want to see the holes I'm missing.
What?
I think it's just being a business owner is tough.
Like, it is.
It's yeah. Like, no matter what business it is, it's tough. Like
I'm looking for that magic business that's like.
Yeah. Aren't we all?
I'm looking for that magic. And it's, you know what? It's software as a service. No, I couldn't do what you guys do. Like, because the minute something goes, wrong calls
me. I'm going to quit. I'm mad about you. I'm close to me. And the ones from California. For you, this product. Job.
You cannot do it. That's my point. They can't do that. They can't do that.
Expedited service line. You have a complaint and you want the expedited service line, you call in the 800 number, you put in your credit card number.
If you were the only shop in town, that would work. If you were the only shop in town. That's my point is like, I need to find that in whatever's interesting to me. I need to find that. I've thought about like, you know, making trinkets or whatever. Like, who complains to ATEM when the ATEM doesn't work?
Have you ever seen their Reddit or their subreddit?
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like the product thing, it's like, dude, you're using the product wrong. I don't know what to tell you. You're using it wrong. Like, don't dip it underwater. It doesn't work underwater. You want to do the scuba podcast? You don't dip it underwater. It doesn't work for underwater. But it's it online. It's like, dude, I don't know what to tell you. Read the manual.
Here's the thing, though, is y'all know David pretty well. I know David pretty well. David is not a very consistent human being. And he's going to find something else that he's enamored by within 10 minutes of starting a new business. It's going to be the next auto repair shop. It's not going to make a difference in his life.
It's not shiny. It's not like that. There are some things that are interesting to me that have maintained their interest level over years. But you have to dial down. And it's like, okay, why is that appealing to me? There's something behind that. So you just have to dig in a little bit further.
Can you give me like one example? You're never consistently enamored by any one thing.
I like podcasting. This is fun.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, there you go. I just completely destroyed your stupid argument, didn't I?
You're right.
We've been, how long? 4 years now, almost. 4 years doing this. Every week. I missed 1 week because I had COVID. Every week, putting up. I haven't stopped. Dedication. I don't get bored with it. I don't like, I gotta duh. Like, I don't know. And you know what? Like, even like the YouTube videos and stuff like that, I would like dive way deeper into that and stuff like that if I had the time. If I had nothing else to do and that was my job, are you kidding me? I would put the stupidest gags in our YouTube videos.
I enjoy those videos.
I appreciate that. But I would do all of the stupid shit. I would do all of it.
I've been asking you to do all the stupid shit for a long time now, and you just...
I don't because it's, dude, it is time consuming.
Well, I know, but it's not like you do anything at the shop.
That's true. I try to. I make more of a mess than anything.
I know. Juan's like, you know, dude.
I was talking to Juan and he's like, yeah, so we're going to do, we should get another $5,000 or $6,000 out tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, that's great. We're having a good week. I'm like, this is a great week. And he's like, yeah. And it's like, I don't know what it is. Like, whenever you're gone, the guys just work. Now, he was just saying, he wasn't trying to like insult me or anything like that. I'm like,
you know, he sends me messages asking if I can distract you.
Get out of here. and I go, is that what it is? And he's like, I guess. I don't know.
That sounds like a great business, though.
I feel like I walk in and I distract everybody because it's like, you know, I go in to hang out. I try to work.
You distract people.
The problem is just like, look, I have no problem coming in and doing some things for a little bit of time. So like I want to come in and I want to check in cars. So I'll check in 2 or 3 cars. But there's 7 cars. I don't want to check in all 7 cars. I just want to check in 2 or 3 and then I'm bored with it and I don't want to do it anymore. And so like I'll just walk away from it. And then like I'll estimate a job or two
but I don't want to do all of them. And then sometimes like, oh, I don't want to do this at all. And then I just leave it. And then I just walk away.
Back to that short
attention
right there.
I'm telling you,
because it's boring. It's boring. It's like, this is exhausting. And so, I'll do an oil change. I'll do an oil change. But don't expect me to do all these oil changes. Like, I'm not doing all of them. That's just nuts. You know, I'll put the headphones in, and I'm like, I'll knock out this inspection, this oil change. But I'm very clear. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to do this one. And then the rest of you guys are on your own. I don't want to do anything past that.
We got to get a live video of you at the shop.
I know.
That would be
just cool. A live cam.
I'm sure there's a camera somewhere. It's like,
put a GoPro on him for a day, see where he ends up at.
Very much the seagull manager, you know, comes in, takes somebody's lunch, shits all over the place, and leaves.
And walks away with that smirk.
I don't feel good about that. And if I feel bad about how the day is going, I buy them lunch. I'm like, oh, this is a nightmare. I
made a real shit show today.
I buy them lunch at least once a week, but if it's a like, it's like, ooh, this is rough. I'm gonna buy everybody lunch. Yeah. I'll buy them lunch and then I leave.
My shop definitely performs better without me. They do a much better job if I'm not there.
He's trying to speak that into existence.
No, they do. They do much better if I'm not
there. Why the hell do you even bother?
I don't know. I guess I feel like I need to. I feel bad if I'm not there.
Yeah, I feel bad if I'm not there either. Not when I'm doing like other things, if I'm busy, but if I'm not like, because otherwise, like, I'll just go home and play video games.
But you guys then work from home then, correct?
I could.
Do you work from home or?
Home is at work. At, like, so marketing. I'm like,
oh, okay.
Like, I can,
oh, yeah,
like,
that's right. That's, you just walk.
Right. It's right down there. Right. Might as well just go to work, right?
Yeah.
We're building so there's a new podcast studio while we're here being built in the upstairs of the office of the shop. So, like, it's super insulated and everything else to be quiet. So, I'll be able to, like, record and work up there. And so, like, maybe if I just go in there and hang out, I won't be distracting them as bad. And, like, what? And Eric brought this up to me last week. Is he said, I feel like when you're here, I put so much pressure on myself to make the decision I think you would make that I stop making decisions. And so, like, I'm really, really bad to and I'm snappy about decisions, and I'm not necessarily as forgiving as I should be about them making a decision I wouldn't make.
Right.
Right. And so I've talked to them multiple times about, I think I need to give you guys the autonomy to make decisions. And I noticed that, especially with Jade over the past couple of weeks, we had some situations where we lost jobs because I had put so much emphasis on Jade about, like, hey, here's the rules. And here's the rules of which we do business. And we don't get outside these. These are the guardrails. One of them is we always tell clients, if we don't think we're going to be able to get something done, we want to go ahead and let them know ahead of time, right? We want to get in front of that. And she's become so observant of that, that everybody that comes in the door, she's like, now, we could get you done today, but I am going to tell you that there is a chance we do not. And she stands there and nods at him. And it's like, dude, you're basically telling them you're not going to.
Right.
Well, yeah, but you gave me these rules. This is what you told me to do. And so it's like, when things go wrong, I make new rules so things don't go wrong, but eventually you end up with so many fucking rules that nobody can do anything.
Nobody can do anything.
So I just got to walk away.
You're most here. Nobody don't drop an F-bombs. You can say shit. Ass. Damn. Just don't know.
That is like the listen, you know my vocabulary by now.
There's a Taylor Swift song that she just casually drops F-bombs in the song. And she's like, hey, I'm not teeny bopper anymore. I'm cool and edgy and like an adult. Because F this, F that. The whole song. F this, F that, F this. And unnecessary. It was unnecessary. It's like, it doesn't enhance the song. Like, F the police. That makes sense. Like, that's the essence of the song. That makes sense. But she's just throwing F-bombs just to be like, oh, yeah.
We need a Taylor Swift cover of some F the police, huh?
Yes.
That's what I'm hearing.
That'd be powerful.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Let's just say that. Yes.
Are you okay?
I'm fantastic.
All right. Okay. Thank you for listening to the Changing the Industry podcast. If you enjoyed the show, do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. And don't forget to set it to automatically download the latest episode. Our efforts with this podcast, the YouTube channel, and the Facebook group wouldn't be possible without the support of our awesome sponsors. So please take a moment, check them out by clicking on the links in the show notes.